language that everybody here can easily understand.
Just because it's late doesn't mean we're done yet.
And the server, that's a pen!
And the quarterback, you kidding me, coach?
There's still plenty more hits to dish out.
Well, he really hit the shit out of that one, didn't he? Look at that, he hit the f***ing ball. That gets a free stay.
This is Late Hits. Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph. Get Physical RX. And by Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
This is the only live, local, consistent evening sports radio show in the city of Houston. Late Hits, ESPN 97.5. Patrick Creighton with you, 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN on the HRMP listening line, on the text line, on Twitter, at PCreighton1. Sean Mapes on the other side of the glass, the master controls. Sean, I haven't seen you in ages. Where have you been?
I think I'm up too early for you now,
Pat. You might be. What's your Twitter handle? Because I've forgotten.
At Sean A. Mapes.
At Sean A. Mapes. There you go. On the tweet, on the Twitch channel, twitch.tv/ESPN975, ESPN975.com, ESPN975 app. Hey, Google, play ESPN975. Alexa, play ESPN975. Take us with you everywhere you go. For those of you on the Twitch channel, you would see we're about to do an episode of The Wheel Hits, as joined by both Brad Kellner and Cody Stutes. Important for me to have these guys on. One, because anytime we talk hoops and guys in college, always want to talk to BK. And two, because sitting at the far left of the dais, the reigning, defending, undisputed BMF champion of Who Said It, Cody Stutes.
Thank you, Patrick. Thank you. In fact, I will probably need your services as my introduction the next time I appear on the Killer Bees to defend my Who Said It championship.
I'll slick my hair back and everything.
There you go.
Get it all done for you. Now, you did say you challenged them for weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You said you were going to beat them. Right out the gate, he's up 1-0. And then he beats. At what point did you know you had them?
When it got to the very last bit, and I knew that they were comfortable enough that they could tie and keep their championship, because you got to beat the champion. You can't tie the champion. You got to beat the champion. When they knew that they could had a chance to tie, I was like, okay, they're going to overthink this. They're going to shoot for the tie, and they're going to lose. And sure enough, they overthought it, shot for the tie, and lost.
Okay, now so we have to do the – when you're the champ, you're supposed to get a champ's interview. And on that segment, after Cody won, as soon as he started to do his own interview, they went to break like cowards, like chickens, ran like scalded dogs. So we're going to do your championship interview. On the very first one, it was actually me. And the phrase was, with ticket fees, you're getting prison sexed. And your answer was, prison sexed, that's Creighton.
Yep.
Have you heard me say that phrase before, or you just knew that's a really crude phrase, that's got to be Patrick?
The latter. Yeah. I had never heard you say that before, but I quickly ran through the list of people who would say that and say it that way, and I was like, that's Creighton.
You know why I say that?
Well, yeah, because I think the way you want to say it is probably not appropriate for the radio.
That is true, but the origin of that is the Tool song, Prison Sex.
Ah.
You know, which obviously I can't say, you know, blank in the blank. So we use the term prison sex.
There you go.
To reflect that. So, yes, that was actually quite excellent thinking by you.
Yeah, you were a key part of my victory because you were one of the two answers I got correct.
See that? Look at that. I am helping the wheelhouse and helping Cody overthrow the fascist regime of the Killer Bees.
I love that. And Cody was confident, too, with that PC answer.
Oh, yeah.
You knew it was Patrick.
Oh, yeah.
You were dead on. Joel and Jeremy were debating for like 3 minutes, like, who could this be? And Cody's like, as soon as it was his turn, oh, that's Creighton.
Yeah, it took him 3 seconds. Yeah. That's Creighton. Go.
I think my confidence on the first answer and getting it correct threw them off. I think it threw them off.
I think they were spooked. They're like, oh, he's been listening. He knows. They're spooked.
Mm-hmm. This guy's the Mark Messier of the wheelhouse.
He delivered.
He guaranteed something, and he delivered.
The anti-Patrick Ewing.
Yes.
The anti-Ewing.
That probably works better in this town.
Anti-Ewing. Yeah, anti-Ewing.
Okay, so you did not get a chance to expunge upon your victory. Would you like to do like a Tyson Fury song here?
Oh, no.
Or
what does he sing? American Pie?
He sings American Pie.
Yeah. Yeah, what's your go-to song? What's your karaoke song, Cody?
What's your victory song?
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
What are you putting in the car and cranking up to celebrate your victory?
I'll probably throw on some Shaken by Eddie Money. You know?
Really?
That's a go-to. Hey. That's a nice, easy one. Eddie Money doesn't have a voice that you can't try to replicate at karaoke.
Not only is Eddie Money an all-time great, but Eddie Money...
How did he get this so fast? Oh, my gosh.
Eddie Money, the most famous alum of my high school.
Wow, okay. That's why I'm sure Sean Mapes had that so fast.
What happened to you?
Two.
Okay.
Oh, well, you're number two?
You're very modest.
Number two.
Well, then you're the most famous living alum from that high school.
There you go.
Yeah, Eddie Money, you know, no longer with us.
It unfortunate, Eddie Money no longer with us.
He cashed out.
He was a great dude. I mean, he was a legit great dude, and had the opportunity to converse with him a couple of times.
Oh.
He did a lot of charitable stuff. They were actually doing a reality show when his illness kind of started to take a turn for the worse, and unfortunately, we lost a great musician in Eddie Money, but most famous alumni of Island Trees High School.
There you go.
Most known for book banning controversy.
Oh, wow. Well, that's good for you. You couldn't read anyway, right?
I read very well. I even speak well. It's the thought process sometimes that might not connect, but I'm pretty good at reading. I even read fairly fast.
Oh, okay.
When
I've underestimated
today, you. Like for example, my kids got to take forensics in high school.
What?
I would have taken forensics in high school. Is no, that... my choices were calculus or speed reading.
Yeah. Oh, did you take speed reading?
I took speed reading.
What was your level of reading prowess? Because right now I'm at a third grade level. What are you at?
That's you can't. If you're at a third grade level, you can't even read the New York Times, because the New York Times is a fourth grade level.
Well,
I did not know that.
I don't subscribe.
Wife's a teacher.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
I had to be intelligent enough to marry somebody smart.
There you go.
But, we had gotten to the point where, like, I could bang a page down in about 2 seconds.
Hmm. What?
That's how fast when we're, like, at optimal speed in the speed reading class.
Yeah.
You had a figure standard paperback size book. I could read a page in 2 seconds.
Jeez.
I heard 2 seconds on banging.
Not always what you want.
And I'm, sorry.
Hey, you know what? Sex is a race, and I finish first.
I'm sure the missus is thrilled with that one.
But if we were having sex, she'd tell you.
She'd corroborate that story. Oh,
listen, there's a reason why I had boy-girl done, and my youngest is 15.
Hmm.
Okay? It's been a minute.
There you go.
There you go.
That's Cody Stutes, the champion.
Yes.
Of Who Said It, as he should be. I know you have to go.
Yep.
So I appreciate you taking a few minutes. Congrats, champ.
Thank you.
And I will make sure that next Friday that I come in to be your Paul Heyman.
Well, here's the thing. I have the championship for 2 weeks guaranteed, because they're not even going to try to come after my championship next week. Brendan's on vacation.
Charlie Palillo in the production room. So in two weeks, I will be your Paul Heyman.
I'll have a Patrick Creighton intro as I defend my Who Said It championship on the Killer Bees show.
Got to get a Cody Stutes shirt so I can wear it.
If I win three in a row, they should have to try to come win it back on the wheelhouse.
You should retire the belt if you win three in a row.
Yes, true too.
The segment's over if you win three in a row.
Three in a row.
You're done.
There you go. Cody Stutes, the champ.
PC, thank you.
Peace out.
Have a great show.
Astros and the Yankees, nothing going on yet. No score in that contest. Rockets had a hell of a day at the draft. Two drafts in a row, Rafael Stone can say, winner! And we'll get more into that with BK, Brad Kellner of the Real House, next.
ESPN 97.5.
This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical RX, and by Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
More late wheel hits as BK still with us. One more segment. Tell you a little story because apparently you guys got a good laugh out of Sex is a Race and I Finish First.
Uh-huh.
So in conceiving my son, the firstborn, took 2.5 years. There were...
You lasted that long?
There were some complications. Mm. There was some heartbreak. But finally, after 2.5 years, on Christmas Day, wife woke me up. And I can tell you it was like 6:30 in the morning. So I did the Popeye thing, you know, one eye open, one eye closed, not really cognizant. And she's got the test. She's like, it's blue. It's blue. And I'm like, it's blue. And I'm like, what? And that was how, like, we found out she was pregnant.
Wow, on Christmas.
On Christmas
Day. That's awesome.
And he was born in the middle of August following year. So it took 2.5 years to get to that point. My daughter took 1 hour.
Mm.
Let's have a second child. 1 hour. Boom. You can't be pregnant. We didn't practice enough yet. Yep. Second time, my accuracy was on point.
Well done.
To my own detriment. So don't be accurate.
That's supposed to be the best part of marriage,
take
right?
Take your time.
The time when you're trying
yes,
for children.
The failure rate. The yes. High failure rate is the fun part.
That's what yeah. you're looking for. You want your swimmers to die early. You don't want them to make it all the
don't
way.
Don't make it yet, little Tommy.
You had Michael Phelps swimming the second time, it sounds like.
Yeah, the swimmies were too powerful the second time. and then basically life was over. So let's get into the NBA draft. I thought last night was another banner draft for the Rockets. BK, you are like the preeminent college hoops guy here at ESPN Houston, so nobody better to ask than you. Your thoughts, let's start with the overall draft that the Rockets had.
Well, first of all, I want to start hanging out with Rafael Stone because that guy is very lucky. He's very fortunate. You could argue he was fortunate to get the job in the first place. The James Harden trade is starting to look very fortunate. And, man, draft picks just seem to fall in his lap, right? Şengün last year fell a lot lower than what everybody expected. The Rockets got him. He looks like he could be a really, really good player in this league. And obviously last night with Jabari Smith. I thought there was a chance that Jabari didn't go number one, right? There were rumors yesterday that Banchero might have been the pick there. But if that were the case, I thought for sure Oklahoma City was going to pivot and take Jabari at two. So, Patrick, I didn't think there was any chance the Rockets were going to get Jabari there at three. And I think he's the best player in this draft. And I think most people that you ask think he is the best player in this draft. I think his floor is pretty high. But I also think, more importantly, he's got star potential in this league. So to get the best player in the draft at three is incredibly impressive. And then to walk away with two other guys who I think can contribute early on, it was a really good draft for the Rockets. And by the way, they also picked up two future second round picks moving back from 26 to 29 to get Ty Washington. So, hey, you're looking at all these winners and losers articles today, all of the draft grade articles today. It seems like nothing but praise for what Rafael Stone and company were able to pull off last night.
Now, let me ask you this from this point of view. With the Rockets and, you know, they get Jabari Smith. And did we learn a lesson in the 24 hours before the draft? Vegas knows more than Woj.
Yep.
And literally every other writer. Because everybody, every national writer, every quote insider, all swore up and down on their mama's grave, Jabari Smith was going number one. And then he didn't. But the night before, all over Vegas, sports books were like in panic mode. And Paolo Banchero went from plus 800 to be number one to as high as minus 400. Vegas knew what every writer was telling us wasn't true to be true. And they were right. Should we just scrap writers and just follow whatever the lines are?
I'm done with Woj. I'm done with Shams. I'm done with every insider. I'm following Vegas. Vegas always they got better sources than anybody else out there. They were the only people who had this thing right. I mean, Woj literally yesterday morning, you referenced it, tweeted out that, man, it's going to be Jabari 1, Chet 2, Paolo 3. But Vegas the night before was like, nah, something might be changing here. So, yeah, Vegas always knows, like you said.
It was interesting because Jabari Smith did not work out for the Rockets.
No, he didn't.
Yeah, he only worked out for the Magic and the Thunder. And the Thunder have been connected to Chet Holmgren, you know, like from the beginning of time. It was always going to be Chet Holmgren. And like you said, when Banchero went first, there was that, are the Thunder now going to take Jabari Smith? And I'm sitting here last night going, please take Chet Holmgren. Please take Chet Holmgren. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to diminish Chet Holmgren's skills because I think he's a highly skilled player. I have a lot of durability concerns with a guy who's 7 foot tall and 190 pounds that big guys who are real skinny often have foot problems because you're putting a lot of torque on your foot. Kevin Durant, when he first came into the league, had foot problems. Yeah. How many big guys have we known, Yao Ming, to have foot problems? And Yao Ming wasn't even that skinny. He was, you know, pretty solidly built. But big guys have foot issues. And he's 190 pounds. I feel like when you weigh less than a point guard and you got to get down in the blocks, somebody's going to butt bump you, your little Charles butt bump.
Yeah.
Sir Charles butt bump. But he's going to wind up in the third row. I mean, if it was the 90s, it might wind up in the 12th row.
Yeah.
But I have durability questions. I don't have questions about his skills. I think he'll be very good. But he looks more Sean Bradley than Giannis. Now, when Giannis first came into the league, he was skinny, but he looked like a guy who could fill out. I don't see that with Chet Holmgren. I don't see him being 265 pounds anytime ever in his life. Will he block shots? Sure. You know, Manute Bol used to stand weak side and get blocks. Manute Bol also was a useless offensive player. And look, nothing but love for Manute Bol. But the truth is, he had a lot of weak side blocks, and he got rebounds that came to him because he could outreach everybody.
Yeah,
but he had very little athleticism. I think Holmgren has some athleticism, but I don't see him being the physical athletic freak that Giannis is.
No, he's not that kind of athlete. I mean, he's more athletic than Sean Bradley, and I think he's got more athleticism than Manute Bol too, but he's not a freak athlete like that. And the durability concerns are absolutely fair. I mean, you talk about the history of big guys with foot problems, BC. Well, couple that with the fact that Holmgren wasn't sending out all of his medicals to interested teams. There was a thought that, hey, teams were scared to draft Chet Holmgren. There was a thought, we had Tim McMahon on from ESPN earlier today, and he's like, man, the Rockets were concerned about Chet Holmgren because they didn't get the medical information they wanted. So if Chet Holmgren didn't go to Oklahoma City, there was a thought that maybe the Rockets were going to pass up on him at 3. So maybe there's something there already with Chet Holmgren. Maybe it's not a down-the-line kind of thing. Maybe there's already something that's popping up with that guy that scares people. So, look, I think Chet's got potential to be a really, really good player, but there's no question there's more risk with him than with Jabari Smith. And I also think you could argue the ceiling for Jabari Smith is even a little bit higher. I think Chet's got a high ceiling, too, don't get me wrong, but higher floor and higher ceiling, I would argue, for Jabari. It makes it a better pick and the right pick for the Rockets.
Now you're thinking about Jabari, and, you know, Jabari might be the best shooter in the draft, and he's 6'10". Like, to me, when you get a guy who's that big, who can stroke it, and gets after it on defense, he's 19 years old. He probably is going to need some time to, you know, kind of come into his own. You know, we saw that last year with Jalen Green, first half of the year. He kind of had to find himself, find his way, you know, dealt with an injury. Second half of the year, looked like an all-star, filling up the bucket. You know, at the end of the year, he was playing better than any rookie in the league.
Yeah.
So, you know, now you've got the big guy that goes with your two guard, and then you add Ty Washington as your future point guard. I think between him and Kevin Porter Jr., you've got some guys who can distribute the ball, score the ball. Maybe in a year or so, maybe Ty Ty's your starting point guard, and you know, Kevin Porter Jr. is like the lead dog on the second unit, just filling up buckets in short minutes. I don't. They're going to have options, and they're going to be able to run like champions. Like the one thing about it, they got a lot of guys who can get up and down the floor.
Yep. There's no doubt about that. Jabari's great in transition. Tari Eason is really good in transition.
Good. I was going to ask you about him next.
Yeah. I mean, an interesting stat about Tari Eason. He shot 5.6 free throws per game in less than 24 minutes per game. It's one of the highest free throw rates in college basketball last year. He shot 80% at the charity stripe, too. So he's best finishing at the rim, but he also is a really, really good athlete. He's got the size of a forward. He's about 6'7", but he moves like a guard. So he's quick, and he can get out and run. You think of Jalen Green. You think of KPJ. You think of Jabari Smith. Those guys can all move up and down the floor, too. So we saw a lot of highlights from the Rockets last year. I know their win-loss total was what it was, but in terms of in transition, on the break, the Rockets made a lot of highlight-worthy plays. They've got the chance to do even more of those this year with some of the guys they picked up.
They are – look, they're younger again, right? Tari Eason, I think, is what, 20, 21?
Yes.
And, you know, Smith and Ty, I think, are 19 each. So this team is getting younger than it was a year ago. Christian Wood will not be here, and I would think it's highly likely by the time the season starts that Eric Gordon will probably not be here, and they'll pick up more draft capital for next year's draft. But let me ask you, the talent level, like just pure talent, I think they have definitely gone up. But they're also going to be even younger than they were a year ago. Do you think that the win total will move up? And I know that they've said, look, they're not concerned about wins right now. They're still concerned about development. Will the win total, in your opinion, move up more than 5? Because if it's less than 5, I think it's kind of nondescript. Will they be more than 5 up in the win column, or do you think it's going to be another year of they're not going to win a lot of games, but they're going to be exciting to watch?
Right. Yeah, I think it'll be in the 5 to 10 range. So I do think it will move enough for you to qualify it as movement. I'll tell you what, if it doesn't, Steven Silas is probably losing his job. I mean, there are plenty of Rockets fans already who were questioning whether or not he's the right coach, but you should see some signs of development. Like, this cannot be the worst team in the NBA for the third straight year. Odds are they're going to have a bottom 6 or 7 record, maybe even a bottom 5 record in the league once again. But they
just can't be dead last.
They can't be dead last. They can't win 20 games again. Like, it's got to be 25 at least to feel confident that this thing is really moving in the right direction.
Like, my biggest issue with Silas is something that eventually did get corrected, and that was the amount of time that it seemed to take for them to get Jalen Green to be the lead dog. It felt like there was this whole big block of the season where they're like, you know, we want you to play defense, and we want you to pass, and we want you to do this, we want you to do that. And at the end of the game, for whatever, we're not going to give you the basketball, even though you're the number 2 overall pick, you're legitimately the future of the franchise, but we're not going to let you have the ball when it matters. Like, it seemed like that didn't happen until like the final 2.5 months of the season. And then when it did happen, all of a sudden, here's Jalen Green blossoming into what we all thought he was going to be his rookie season.
Yeah, and I think that's why a lot of people can't stand Christian Wood around these parts, right? Because it was Christian Wood getting those opportunities and taking them away from Jalen Green.
Clanging them all.
Yeah, and look, I think that's the biggest gripe with Rockets fans about Steven Silas. It's the rotations. Like Shane Goon didn't play enough minutes for my liking last year, and a lot of Rockets fans agree with me. Like, that guy, when he was on the floor, made stuff happen. He didn't get enough minutes. I'm with you on Jalen Green. It felt like his role didn't become what it was until too late in the season. So I don't know if that's his call. I don't know if that's coming from management, but rotations have been a cause for concern over the last couple of years, and it's going to be important. With all of this young talent that the Rockets have, it's going to be important to make sure you get your guys the minutes that they deserve.
I'm accepting of losing if our young guys are developing.
Yeah.
Because in 2 years, when these guys are ready to roll, your cap number will be extremely low. Actually, starting next year, the cap number will be extremely low because you'll be rid of everything. I got to tell you, at this point, if they're going to buy out John Wall, I don't want them to stretch it. Just eat the money now.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're going to, your ideas on, would you entertain this deal of picking up Gordon Hayward, who would come with one of the picks. Before the draft, there were a lot of rumors that Charlotte would trade Gordon Hayward and either 13 or 15 just to move the money.
Mm-hmm.
He's due $30 million this year and $31 million next year. Still a good player. Excellent shooter. Has size. Not the superstar he once was in Utah, but still a good player who, after this season, will be a $31 million expiring contract. You get a draft pick coming in. Maybe you get a draft pick, first-round pick going out. Would you entertain a deal like that?
That's tough for me. It really is tough for me because I just don't think Gordon Hayward would be a part of this thing long term.
Not intending to, but the idea is you get a draft, a first round pick attached to him on the way in, and then maybe you flip him for a first round pick on the way out.
So I'd rather go with Russell Westbrook just because he has 1 year left on his contract.
But you're getting nothing for him.
Right. Well,
he's just dead money that you can't do anything with.
Exactly. It's you're trading awful contracts. You're trading John Wall. You're getting Russell Westbrook in, but you're cutting Russell Westbrook. So it's you get a first-round pick.
You wouldn't
for the
be trading
situation.
John Wall. You're just taking Gordon Hayward and a first-round pick for free.
Oh, this is okay. Okay, I thought this was John Wall going.
No, this
back.
Is not John Wall. This is I'm going to take Gordon Hayward and a first-round pick for free.
Nah, I'm not.
Which would have been 13 or 15.
Yeah,
maybe would still be 13 or 15. And then at say either at the deadline or in the offseason, you then trade him again and get another first-round pick from somebody else.
Yeah, I can't do it. I can't have those two contracts on my team. If you told me John Wall is in the
deal.
Well,
as I said, John Wall is – I mean, look, he's going to get bought out.
Right.
And if you stretch him, you can take on the contract of Gordon Hayward, no issue.
Yeah.
If you leave it all on there, then you're not really taking on anybody. The idea is basically you're buying two first-round picks, one on the way in,
sure.
One on the way out.
I wouldn't do it.
No,
I mean, there's obviously logic, and you get an extra couple of first-round picks, but I just don't want that guy around, and I don't want more dead money to have to deal with moving forward, so I wouldn't do it.
Skirt!
Some people would.
A little bit?
Some people would. Well, I mean, that's what Houston does. We pay guys to not play.
Pay them to go away.
We do it better than anybody else.
We treat them like prostitutes.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Not paying you for the business. I'm paying you to leave.
How it works, huh?
He's Brad Kellner of The Wheelhouse with us here on Late Hits. Appreciate your time, BK. We'll catch up soon, buddy. Enjoy your weekend.
Anytime, brother. You too.
Coming up next, the college football textpert, Sam Kahn of The Athletic, joins us because Texas football is back.
ESPN 97.5.
I assume you knew...
You are listening to Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical RX, and by Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
All right, joining us right now on the HRMP guest line, covering college football in Texas for The Athletic, he is the college football textpert. So, our buddy Sam Kahn Jr. What's up, Sam? How you doing, brother?
Good. How are you?
Doing all right, man. Thanks for taking some time with us today. So, yesterday, lost in the mix of the Astros and the Yankees and the NBA draft. Some big stuff going down in Austin. Arch Manning, who number one, everybody in the world wanted Arch Manning. Steve Sarkisian gets him. A, how? B, should we be shocked about this? Or, you know, was this kind of in the bag? Like, how did this happen? This is like the biggest thing for Texas football since, you know, Vince Young ran into the corner of the end zone.
And when you say that, it kind of sounds strange to say that it's been that long since that happened. You know, it was a combination of things. Number one, Steve Sarkisian and quarterback's coach J.J. Mill, we did a really good job from the start of building this relationship, even going back to when there still were pandemic restrictions and there was no recruiting allowed in terms of in-person during the dead period. You know, Sark and Mill, we did a good job of even just establishing a relationship through Zoom calls. You know, Nelson Stewart, Arch's high school coach, said, you know, Sark was really good about just connecting and staying in contact with Arch, and then they made a really good first impression last year when Arch went to visit in June. They really connected and and fed into his love of X's and O's. And of course, he was recruited heavily by everybody. You know, Alabama and Georgia were very much in the mix and also did a fantastic job recruiting him. But it seemed to be that the relationship that Sark and Milwee built, Sark's reputation and history of working with accomplished quarterbacks, what he did at Alabama with that offense, the couple years that he was there, all that seemed to appeal to Arch. And I think also the idea of being in Austin was something that he really enjoyed the town. He enjoyed the campus. And I think the chance to bring this program, to try to bring this program to a new level and to get it back to where it once was, as opposed to just being a cog in the machine at Alabama and Georgia where they're already championship programs, I think that appealed to Arch, and it will allow him to kind of blaze his own trail somewhat separate from that of his famous uncles, Peyton and Eli.
So this is kind of the Manning family buying into Sark as the best coach to develop Arch as a quarterback into, you know, ultimately an NFL star.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you look at the list of coaches, of quarterbacks that Sark has coached, all the way back to his days as a coordinator and quarterbacks coach at USC, he coached Carson Palmer, he coached Matt Leinart, Mark Sanchez, and then you go back to more current times, Tua Tagovailoa and Mac Jones at Alabama, both did well with Sark, and then he even spent a little time in the NFL with the Atlanta Falcons working with Matt Ryan. So Sark knows what a good quarterback looks like and knows what how to call plays for a great quarterback, how to protect them, and I think that history and that acumen that he has at that position. Sark was a college quarterback himself, very successful quarterback in 1996 when he was at BYU. They went 14-1 with him as a starter. He was a tremendously productive passer in his own right. So that, and then Milwee too. Milwee was a college quarterback himself. He was at the Division II level. He wasn't a big guy, so he wasn't big enough to go Power 5, but he was a finalist for the Harlan Hill Trophy, which is essentially the Division II Heisman, a couple times. So Milwee's known as a really good teacher as well. So those two guys being able to develop Arch, and I think the path to playing, you know, right now there's no clear starter. Quinn Ewers probably will end up being the starter at some point this season, but Quinn will be draft eligible after 2023. So there seems to be a quicker path to playing and starting at Texas than maybe some of those other schools.
He is Sam Cohn, the college football tech expert with The Athletic, joining us right now on the HRMP guest line. It's funny, I was going to ask you next about, you know, what does this mean for Quinn Ewers? As, you know, look, Arch is a class of 2023 guy, so he's still, you know, got another year of high school before he gets onto campus. And you mentioned about, you know, Ewers has, you know, his track record to being draft eligible is a little faster than that. Is the success that Texas is having now, getting these five-star guys, these big quarterbacks, and other, you know, big five-star recruits, how much of this is just straight Sark? How much of it is, you know, hey, this is a program that's going to be heading to the SEC? And, you know, what is it that, you know, his predecessors were not able to do that Sark is able to do to get these big recruits?
The thing is, I wouldn't say that a lot of his predecessors initially couldn't do it, because Texas has always recruited at a top 10 level nationally. Heck, even Tom Herman's second to last class in 2019 was ranked number 3 in the country. Now, the biggest problem Texas has had has not been signing high level recruits, it's been retaining and developing them. So I mentioned that number 3 class in 2019, it had 26 guys ranked the number 3 class in the country. Well, there's only 6 or 7 of those guys left on campus now out of 26. And the rest have either transferred out or medically retired, and then one finished their eligibility. So, and they didn't have a single draft pick this year. And that 2019 class should be going into its 4th year on campus. That should be your senior class right now. And very little of it is on campus right now. So retention and development has been the biggest challenge, not so much earning commitments from high profile recruits. I think the thing that Sark has done so far is just in this last class, I think they had a really focused plan. I thought they did a good job of attacking different positions. They ended up with 7 offensive linemen because the offensive line was not very good last year, and that was an area of focus. They're going to the SEC, so they signed 8 defensive linemen in the last class. I think there's a combination of the SEC is enticing because they're going to go. Texas as a program and a brand is still relevant nationally, even though the on-field success hasn't been. And also, I think you'd be naive to think that the apparatus and earning potential from an NIL perspective, a name, image, and likeness perspective, it certainly has to be appealing to some guys, because Texas has not been shy about touting its ability for athletes to capitalize on NIL. You have Bijan Robinson out here with a Lamborghini through an NIL deal that he got. I'm sure that the recruits have seen that and noticed that and pay attention to that. And Texas has embraced that part of the game now, as that has become, obviously we're still only a year into that, into NIL, but Texas has not been shy about promoting and capitalizing its athletes' ability to cash in that way. And I have to imagine that resonates with recruits.
Sam, what do you expect, from the Big 12 as, look, Texas and Oklahoma don't leave until 2025, but UH and the other teams come in 2023. So there'll be at least two seasons where UH and Texas are going to be in the same conference and play each other. Does it make any difference in the Big 12, or is that pretty much just going to be something that makes a difference locally?
No, I think it is. It's going to make it an interesting challenge, because the schedule is obviously going to be different for those 2 years, because they're going to be a 14-team league, assuming that Texas and OU stay the whole way. And I think as of right now, that seems to be the assumption. It still seems to be trending that direction. But that'll be a 14-team league, and the question is, and the Big 12 still hasn't figured this out and probably won't figure it out until they get a commissioner in place, is, are they going to have divisions? What's the setup going to be? Is it going to be 9 conference games still? Are they going to adjust the conference schedule? How are they going to distribute those opponents? So that's probably the biggest challenge in the forefront. But I think with Texas and OU still in the league for those 2 years, I think it makes it – the league is already very competitive right now, top to bottom. As you guys saw last year, you know, obviously Oklahoma has ruled the league for a while, but last year Baylor and Oklahoma State played for the Big 12 title. It's really hard to go undefeated in this conference with that round-robin schedule. So when you add these other teams in, they're all good quality programs. Cincinnati just came off the playoff. Houston just came off the 12-2 year. BYU has been a consistent 8-9, 10-win team for quite some time. UCF, we know what they've done going to New Year's Six Bowls in the last decade. Those are all quality programs that you're adding. Just deepens the league further. It's going to make it, I think, that much harder to get through the league unscathed, but it's also, I think, going to strengthen the league in the short term in the eyes of a college football playoff committee, so that a team that comes out of that conference championship, if they only have one loss, I think you have a little bit more respect for the schedule when you add some of the quality teams that they're adding, if they can continue to succeed at that level. But, and then also, I think just from a financial standpoint, it'll be a good boon for the league financially to add those schools, and it'll drive more compelling games, and I think set it on a better footing for when the conference loses those two teams.
He's Sam Kahn, college football expert, college football textpert with The Athletic, joining us on the HRMP guest line. Follow him on Twitter at SKahnJr. Sam, always love talking with you. Lots of great stuff. I always learn stuff when I talk to you, so I got to talk to you more often. I really appreciate taking some time with you, brother. Thank you for taking some time. We'll catch up soon.
Hey, no problem. Thanks so much for having me. Take care.
Sam Kahn Jr. with The Athletic joining us here on Late Hits.
Well, hello.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Disappointed by your HR and payroll technology? Maybe you need to outsource your administration. Go to HRP.net to learn more. This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical RX, and by Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
Well, no score top of the sixth. Alex Bregman with a one-out double. Severino left one up. You hang them, we bang them. You're done to the play. Now, this whole conference realignment thing is very interesting to me because, you know, the Big 12 is going to expand for 2023. But Texas and Oklahoma don't leave until 2025. So for two seasons, you've got a 14-team league. You got UH moving in. What is it, Cincinnati and BYU also moving in? And you'll finally get UH and Texas playing each other. And they'll get Texas Tech, Baylor, TCU. And, you know, for a long time, UH fans have been like, you know, they felt like the, you know, the orphan child. You know, all the old Southwest Conference teams, well, why are they all still, you know, in the Big 12 and we've been, you know, kind of banished to the G5 world? Well, now they're going to get their seat at the table for a couple of years, really after this season. And like, this season is going to be really important to me for UH. If they can have a strong season going into the Big 12, well, look, the competition is going to be better. The games are going to be tougher. The skill players are going to be bigger. Bigger skill and bigger size. But generate some, you know, positive momentum and then kind of capitalize on the, hey, we're Power 5 school. Now there is no difference between us and, you know, you can come here, you can stay home in Houston, and you can be in a Power 5 conference. And at least for the first couple of years, you'll still play Texas and Oklahoma. Can they capitalize on that and push the program forward, both talent-wise and financially? Kind of the way that, you know, A&M pushed their program forward, moving to the SEC, and just windfall of cash. And not just, oh my goodness, we moved to the SEC, we're getting more money. The amount of donors, people who were willing to invest into the program because they moved to the SEC, like, quadrupled. Can UH now get bigger donations? Is it, you know, more than just a Tillman Fertitta show? Can they get a lot more donations now that they're moving into the Big 12? We're stepping up in competition. Now, if we're a really good team, we actually have a shot at a CFP. Because we were in a Power 5 conference. You know, UT is already a super rich school. Just going to the SEC make them richer. Right? The amount of money conference-wise that UH is going to get from the Big 12. Get the hell out! Kyle Driver! 3-0! Kyle Tucker just hit a bomb and a half. Worthy of interrupting my whole thing there. You know what? Yesterday, I was having a great show. I was having a great day yesterday. Opened up the show. Astros are up 6-3. Rockets have Jabari Smith land into their laps. Everything was going great until Ryan Pressly forgot how to pitch and made me want to eat all the feels. I need, for my heart and my soul, I need the Astros to rebound from however much dog poo they stepped in last night in the ninth inning. I need them to rebound clean shoes tonight. And Kyle Tucker with a ba-bomb after Breggy had a double and then Yordan walked. Did Yordan walk on four pitches? I don't even remember him throwing a strike to Yordan. And then Kyle Tucker, Severino came down and into Kyle Tucker, and Kyle Tucker went up and out. Most important thing, Verlander come out for the sixth, not give up any runs. It's a big deal that when you strike, that you do not allow your opponent to answer back right away. That's a big deal. In baseball, that is a big deal. Three-run jack for Kyle Tucker. Boy, the fans behind home plate got real quiet after that one. Every one of those fans who earlier in the game were chanting Altuve sucks when Altuve was not at the plate. The Astros were actually in the field. The Yankees were at bat. And the fan, not let's go Yankees. You know, I'm not cheering on the batter. I think Aaron Judge was up. Not cheering on Aaron Judge. Altuve sucks. So rent free. Yankees fans are so simple minded. They curse Jose Altuve because they all wish they had him. 3-0 Astros. But you know what? When we finally get to UH and the Big 12 playing Texas, that makes the Big 12 a whole lot more interesting to me. Because if Texas is, hopefully Texas is going to keep going 5-7, but a good UH program and a good Texas program in the same conference, that I'm here for. That I want to be signed up for. I do feel like college football is slept on in this city. That, you know, with the exception of the one Tom Herman year where they got off to the really big start before the injuries just depleted the roster, people are kind of laissez-faire on UH. That as good as A&M has been, with the exception of the Johnny Manziel year, that first year where they you know, they beat Alabama. Even though A&M's been pretty good a lot of these years, kind of laissez-faire about A&M. And UT kind of, you know, fighting through the doldrums for the last several years. We'll pretend Charlie Strong never actually coached UT. I feel like college football is a little slept on in Houston. And you know what? Last year, Texas went through a lot of pain. This year, I think they'll be better. But there's still going to be some pain. If we get a good college football season, and I know A&M thinks they're going to have a big season, maybe UH has a nice season, I think college football in this city this coming year is going to be really exciting, probably more than the NFL season. Probably more. Because you know what? If Davis Mills takes a big step forward or two, even if the Texans stink, it's always worth watching your young quarterback take big strides. But I think the odds are in favor of college football being a lot more fun around here this year than the NFL. Don't sleep on it. Coming up next, our buddy Chris Dell from Sports Map Elite has your money plays. It's next.
This is Heisman Trophy winner and College Football Hall of Fame, Mike Rozier, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.